Please listen carefully.
Well, hello world, and welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Summers McKay.
And we're part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of the news media and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
7 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, happy Monday, Christy. Let's see if we can make a difference in the world-worthy podcast. Today is, as I just said, Monday, June 8th, 2020.
Yes, Summers. So how was your weekend?
You know, my weekend was nice. I spent some time with the kids. I spent some time with my parents. I actually spent a fair amount of time in my car driving to and from my parents' house, and I have started listening to a book called White Fragility, which allows for increased methods of conversation about understanding racism in America and racism in the white experience. And then we also had a really interesting and compelling meeting with our partner organizations at the Optimist Daily and the World Business Academy to discuss how, as an organization, we want to take on bringing more Black voices into our publications, as well as being agents of change in the world. So it was a nice weekend, but on Friday, our colleague Craig mentioned that I looked exhausted in the Zoom call, and I realized this morning when I got dressed, I looked just about as tired. So I don't feel particularly rested, but I do feel like I've learned more from Friday to today. What about you? How was your weekend?
It was good. I was also quite busy. We painted a room here in our house, which was kind of fun to do. And I did a fantastic interview with my friend Akilah. I think we'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow. Akilah Shirls, he's a spiritually motivated peace activist who's been working on restorative justice types of programs and sort of community policing in the Black community. Right now he's working in Newark. He was instrumental in the 90s in the peace accords between the Bloods and the Crips in Watts. He's a very interesting, very inspirational character, and I'm really excited to introduce him to our readers because he's a peace warrior, he calls himself, and he really is. So that was a fantastic conversation. I had that on Sunday, and I think I'll try to get a clip of it for our listeners tomorrow.
I'm excited to further that conversation because part of what we talked about on Saturday, everybody, is that we need to source more Black voices and we need to listen more than we talk, which, yes, is a very ironic thing to say when you are hosting a podcast. But part of listening is listening to the right voices, listening to a more expansive source of information. And I'm really excited that the team's committed to it and that you are bringing him in for our conversation. And I think it's a very challenging time. And I will say one thing that made me feel very optimistic this morning on the news is that all the headlines covering protests were talking about peaceful protests. The headline actually said peaceful protest. And I really appreciate the discernment in our local media, this was on KTLA in Los Angeles, choosing to use the words peaceful protest to describe it, to just reiterate that is what's happening. And I think this past weekend's Optimist View touched on that as well, right?
It did. We were talking about the power of nonviolent protest and civil disobedience and how by keeping our center in the protest lane, you actually have more opportunity to affect longer lasting change. I like that article. I wrote it. So people go and read it. The other thing that I just want to take away from my conversation with Akilah, and we can get into this more tomorrow, is that the level of individual trauma that people both in the Black community experience from the systemic racism and structural violence that they endure is mirrored by the trauma that on the individual level that the police force is undergoing. And I do feel concerned that we don't demonize the police overly. I mean, the police system is really not working. We do live in a police state and that is unacceptable and we have to change it. But the men and women who are serving in uniform are also human beings and deserve to be treated as human beings. And one of the things that came out of my conversation with Akilah is that's really, really a problem is the culture of manliness and the fact that for police, they are not allowed to admit that they are having an emotional trauma reaction, PTSD, even though it is actually endemic in the police force. And so one of the things we really have to do is encourage mental wellness and that kind of support in all of our first responders, from our police officers and our firemen and our nurses and our doctors and everybody who has to deal with human suffering in the face. They also have to be treated as human beings and be allowed to experience the pain and trauma just from being involved with those kinds of confrontations. I think that's an important conversation I want to pursue.
I'm excited for that. We'll get more into it tomorrow. We're going to change up the format tomorrow on the Optimist Daily Update because we are going to bring in an interview and talk about that interview. So we're excited to change it up. Actually, my dad was listening to the Optimist Daily Update and he said, "You and Christy should bring on interviews." And I said, "Funny that you say that, Dad, because we're going to."
That's
Christy's interviewing someone right now.
Let's jump into our stories though today. What's the headline that you wanted to showcase in today's conversation?
My headline is one that I think is very powerful and very optimistic, and also I have kind of a personal story with. So the headline is, a female-led energy company is bringing green power to the Navajo Nation. In 1936, the Rural Electrification Act aimed to erase energy access disparities across the U.S., but largely left Native American tribes out. And that lack of access to electricity, as well as internet and other technologies, has had a huge impact on the ability of Native American organizations and communities to succeed. At this point, 75% of non-electric homes in the U.S. are Native American. There is a renewable energy group founded by women aiming to close that energy gap. The organization is called Native Renewals, and they employ Navajo tribe members, hold educational workshops, and promote economic independence, seeking to empower tribal members. What I love about this is that it's an opportunity to take a widely available resource, which is solar, where a lot of these communities live, and turn it into a technology generating, education generating, and energy generating tool. I have a friend who graduated from MIT, and her first startup out of business school was actually bringing internet to Native American communities by using the excess radio towers. Basically, when radio went digital, it allowed all of those radio towers to suddenly become available to be broadcasting internet.
Summer, I just think this is a really, really important solution, both with energy and internet. I'm glad you highlighted it.
Well, and it's something that you've spoken about before, and is just that the technology gap, the energy gap, the electricity gap, we don't even think about it until all of a sudden we have this coronavirus quarantine epidemic where people who are not participants in our electricity or internet grids really are left out. This is just a great solution that's acknowledging that there is that gap specifically with these communities.
And when you have 300 days of solar resources available to you, it's really kind of almost a crime to let that go to waste if you want to have electrical power in your homes. And that leads to greater health. It leads to having water pumps that work. It just changes the whole thing. It's sewage you can develop. The thing that I find interesting, though, is because the internet is not considered a utility, it's not required to go all over the country. So you have rural communities where it doesn't make market sense for like Time Warner or T-Mobile or any of these places to put in high speed internet. And they are really left out when it comes to dealing with the online world that many of us are living in. So some communities are trying to bring that in and create community development, but then they get so much heavy lobbying from these agencies. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Navajo Nation and other tribal areas can overcome that and also overcome the high-speed internet issues by creating community development.
Yeah, it's...
Sorry.
Christy's phone rang. That's pretty funny. All right, so what story got you fired up this morning, Christy?
Well, similar to yours, which is kind of people really becoming their own solution generators and fixing a problem that they see by their own energy. The story that I wanted to spotlight, the headline is, "This man started a father and daughter coding startup after being in prison." And I just think that this is a brilliant solution-oriented story about this man, Antoine Patton, who had a difficult childhood. The story describes how he got his first dead-end job when he was 14 years old, and he became a father when he was just a teenager. And a few years later, he was arrested for committing some crime. I don't know what the crimes were. But while he was in prison, he really sought to find a way to get out of the cycle of poverty and violence and prison that he knew he was destined for if he really didn't do something. So one of the things he did was he took to learning. And one of the things he learned was how to code. He read an article about the mobile tech explosion, and he knew that if he had that tool, that he could actually become a contributing member of that revolution and could be a way out of poverty. So he taught himself to code when he was released from prison and continued studying. And he also was working with his teenage daughter named JJ. And together they launched a nonprofit mobile app that connects children with their incarcerated parents. And they didn't stop there. They continued on to launch Unlock Academy, which teaches others to code. And I just think this is great.
What I think both stories that we're talking about today really speak to us, Christy, is that they are solutions that we see, that it is acknowledging that there is disparity in opportunity and identifying ways of resolving it. I think that's one of the most important things that we as the media can do, is acknowledge the disparity. And this is representation that we've talked about, and being able to share this and know that recidivism challenges, and how, you know, somebody who's been convicted of a crime and served time in prison, that their opportunities can be limited, but instead there are ways to invest in communities and invest in helping people grow and perhaps get to the root of some of the challenges that we see in our world today. It's just the beginning of a conversation, but I think that while you and I don't want to have all of our solutions focused on the race and Black Lives Matter movement, there are so many solutions that are becoming clear to us that need to be elevated. So I love that you pulled this one out. And I think that together, this along with so many of the other headlines on the Optimist Daily today are great. There is another headline about new design making solar capture 35% more efficient. We should probably connect that with my story. Scientists discovering the oldest and largest structures built by the Maya. What else do we have in there? Oh, well, Ben and Jerry's.
Ben and Jerry's and corporate activism. Not only do they make great ice cream,
they have been great corporate stewards for a really long time.
Yeah, both with the environment and other social justice and racial justice kinds of things. And I don't know why, Summers, but my mind is not working that great this morning. Forgive me, please. It's Monday.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's Monday. We might both sound a little bit distracted. I think part of why we're both a little distracted is just because we have this huge challenge ahead of us. And we take this with just unbelievable levels of responsibility. And I think that Christy and I are continuing to be committed. Our entire organization is. We are so honored by our staff and their commitment to acknowledging what we need to change in our corner of the media world, and what hopefully the work we do at the Optimist Daily will change for others and encourage media across the world to do better. So thank you for listening to the Optimist Daily update today, our sort of fits and starts version. But we do promise to continue to share positive solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. We promise to cover the current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, diverse voices, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And if you want to actually read what we've been talking about, please go to the Optimist Daily and read all of today's solutions. We didn't get through very many of them. And also, when you do get online, please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com. And for only $5 a month, you can support reader-funded independent journalism and be a part of the solution, changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. Thanks so much, Summers, and thank you everyone for listening.
Have a great day, guys, and tune in tomorrow because it's going to be really, really interesting. Take care.